Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Selig steps down as baseball commissioner on Sunday. And it occurs to me that his legacy is going to be a lot like the game itself. If you can't see its positive aspects, you're probably better off worrying about deflated footballs, to be honest. But I've said often that baseball has grown in recent years as an industry to the point where it's become comfortable with some of the more anachronistic aspects of the game. It stopped trying to bend over backwards to appeal to people who will never be fans. And, you know, even the current examination of time of game is really more about gradually repositioning itself as an entertainment product than it is about some sort of radical alteration. You know, some of the time of game rules make sense. Some of them, like the pitch clock, are quite frankly idiotic. And eventually a consensus will be found, because that's the only way you can move forward in a game that has as many nuances as baseball. It is, as my friend John Lowe often reminds me, the one sport where the defense has possession of the ball. You know, baseball has grown as a business under Selig. It's a $9 billion industry right now. When he took over from Fay Vincent, it was $1.2 billion. And while there are lots of blemishes on his record, you think of his heavy-handed handling of the 1994 player strike. You think of the blind eye that was turned to steroids. For some of you, the move of the Montreal Expos, although frankly, that's worked out pretty well from a business point. No, it's worked out damned well from a business point. And to be quite honest, that move is as much a failure of the Montreal business community as it is any grand plot by anybody to move anything. But even if you look at those blemishes, it's hard to argue that the administration of this game has never been better. I mean, Selig doesn't get all the credit for the competitive balance, for the 22 new stadiums, for the robust national and regional television contracts, and most importantly, for 21 years of labor peace under his watch. He doesn't get all credit for that. But he certainly deserves credit for being the type of backroom consensus builder who has created an environment that has allowed the good stuff to flourish. He deserves credit, frankly, for getting out of the way, for getting owners to trade a salary cap for a luxury tax, for instituting a wild card format that has actually reinforced the integrity of the regular season. Now, think about that. Baseball overhauled its playoff structure, and in so doing, has actually made its regular season more valuable. That's no easy trick. And this can't be said enough. Bud Selig deserves a lot of credit for helping convince owners that getting a leg up on every other North American league when it came to online presence was crucial. Major League Baseball figured out how to monetize the internet way before any other organization. And how successful has it been? Well, it's been this successful. You go to the Olympics overseas, you go to the World Cup, your online ticket purchase will be done essentially through a company run by Major League Baseball. Other sports use Major League Baseball's online properties to sell tickets. So I want you to think about that as we consider the legacy of Bud Selig. Guy with the bad haircut, the guy who was always cupping his ears in news conferences, couldn't hear things, needed stuff repeated. The guy that always looked like he was out of it. He's really as dumb as a fox, as it turns out. And quite frankly, that's not bad for a guy who was a car dealer from Milwaukee with the bad haircut. I'll say this. I think Bud Selig, 5 years down the road, people are going to look at the legacy of Bud Selig and say he was one of the most effective commissioners in the history of professional sports. And he set a real high standard for Rob Manfred to follow. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. I know that Bud Selig is hugely unpopular with a lot of baseball fans in this country. I mean, every commissioner is going to be unpopular. Gary Bettman's unpopular as well. But I'm hoping that we can have a discussion about Bud Selig, and I wanted to ask, and I will ask, listeners, do you think history is going to treat Bud Selig fairly? Do you think he deserves to be treated fairly? How do you view him? Was he a good commissioner? Was he a lousy commissioner? Is the game better for having him as its commissioner? Is it worse off for having him as his commissioner? Because this is Canada, how much blame do you lay at his feet for the move of the Montreal Expos? 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. By the way, at 1140, we will be joined by David Sampson. He is the president of the Miami Marlins. He and his stepfather, Jeffrey Loria, of course, were owners of the Montreal Expos. And they ended up getting the Florida Marlins as part of a franchise. They were then called the Florida Marlins as part of a franchise shift that saw John Henry get the Boston Red Sox. It saw Major League Baseball assume control of the Montreal Expos, operate the Montreal Expos for a couple of seasons as they warded the state, and then orchestrate the move of that franchise to Washington, where they became the Washington Nationals. Ted Lerner, the owner of the Nationals, is one of the wealthiest owners in the game. And it was a hugely successful move for Major League Baseball. 416, not so much for Montreal, though. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. You can join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is SN Jeff Blair. Rob Manfred will replace Bud Selig as commissioner on Sunday. Bud Selig will remain as commissioner emeritus. And I'm sure he will still have some say in how things, in how business is conducted. But in turning over the job to Rob Manfred, he's basically turning the job over to his hand-picked successor. And here's the thing about Bud Selig as baseball commissioner. When you are in that position for a long period of time, and he's been in it since taking over in the early 90s as interim commissioner, and then eventually being named full-time commissioner. When you're in that position for a long period of time, it's going to be easy to collect a lot of warts. There's a lot of battles to fight, a lot of labor battles to fight, a lot of battles involving performance-enhancing substances, battles with technology, battles with the evolution of the game. I mean, no sport stands still. Especially in this day and age, with technology being what it is, no sport stands still. And I think the most you can expect from a commissioner in any sport, I mean, we'll put this out there, the notion that commissioners represent the fans' interests, that they are somehow independent arbiters, I mean, that's just nonsense. The commissioner of a sport is a CEO. The commissioner of a sport or of a league operates at the pleasure of his owners. That's what it's all about. He's not there to represent your interests as a fan. He is there to create an environment and administer an environment that allows progress to take place. And that's really what Bud Selig was very good at. And he had to change along the way. But that's something that he was very good at. And here's something else to keep in mind about Bud Selig. 21 years of labor peace. Think about that. Nobody else can say that. Bud Selig managed to convince his owners, some of them who were hardline, old school SOBs, he managed to convince his owners to give up on the notion of a salary cap, settle for a luxury tax. Every other league is a salary cap. Few leagues have the competitive balance baseball has. It's true, the Yankees still spend money. The Dodgers are going to spend money hand over fist. The Red Sox are going to spend money hand over fist. But they're none of them are guaranteed of winning the World Series. As the Miami Marlins have shown a couple times, you can win at least one time. You can win the World Series on the cheap if you use your money properly. So I think that's a way we have to look at Bud Selig's tenure as commissioner. It's not going to be popular, but I think by and large, it's been positive. Sandy in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning, Jeff. It'll tell you how bad the Leafs are when I'm calling you about baseball. question for you. We talk about Selig being a lightning rod for negativity, and you know, every time that we heard about him generally seemed to be when somebody had a complaint. But let me give you the flip side of the coin. Didn't he also do a hell of a lot for the game that maybe you and I and Joe Fan would never notice? But baseball always seemed to truck along. Like you said, 21 years of labor peace, but not just that. To me, other than the steroids, there never seem to be as many scandals around the game as there are some other major sports.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. You know, look, the baseball, and thank you for the call, Sandy. Baseball, like every other sport, I mean, it's got its issues with crime. It's got issues with domestic violence. You know, it's taken some steps towards curing those, or at least towards dealing with those issues. I don't know if we ever cure it. I think by and large, the game's in really good shape. And again, the biggest thing is it's, I think baseball has become comfortable with the fact that if you don't like it by now, you're probably not going to like it. So you aim for a new generation of fans. That's what the pace of game is all about. You aim for a new generation of fans, and maybe it makes a difference. Now, I will admit, it's easy to become more comfortable with yourself when you're a $9 billion industry. Richard Justice of MLB.com has covered Bud Selig for years, both as a reporter in Texas and now for MLB.com. He is one of the writers who gets addressed by his first name in news conferences with Bud Selig, which is, there's a select few who get that honor. And Richard Justice joins the Jeff Blair Show. You are one of those guys, aren't you, Richard?
Yeah, you know, and Jeff, any corporation or sports team or anybody looking for a lesson on public relations, I used to say you just needed to talk to Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley. But beyond that, Bud Selig did his own PR. You know, if he didn't like something somebody wrote, he would call him up and go, hey, here's what you didn't look at, this, this, and this. And I think largely, you know, the larger media voices are very supportive of him because he has made his case eloquently. He took the time to do it.
And, you know, I've often made the case, you know, having sat in some of those BBWAA meetings, you know, one of the reasons that that baseball writers, I think we have, I still consider myself a baseball writer, I think we've probably got the best access to athletes in professional sports. It's because of Bud. Because a couple of times the general managers have wanted to close the clubhouses, and Bud said, nah, not happening.
Right. He's a newspaper guy. He gets up every day, reads the newspaper first thing, gets all the clips sent to him. And, you know, if you're a columnist in Poughkeepsie and you wrote something Bud didn't like, he'd pick up the phone and get you on the phone. In fact, I begged him at times, hey, don't call that guy. You're just going to feed that guy's ego. I'm calling him.
But, you know, exactly.
He's going to address the employees at baseball media. He's making a tour today of the corporate offices at Park Avenue and then going to the MLB Network and baseball media. And it's a pretty amazing legacy. You know, you and I lived through those for 20 years. They had 8 work stoppages, almost 2,000 games lost, and nothing turns off fans like millionaires and billionaires arguing over money. And he got the owners to speak with one voice in 20 years of labor peace. That's where his legacy begins. And then to convince the big market owners to give some money to the small market owners, pretty much every in revenue sharing, everything flowed from there. And, you know, he gets things that he didn't understand, like in 1992, things he couldn't have known. He couldn't have known where the Internet was going. Mm-hmm. But he embraced it. He surrounded himself with smart people. And they've, from a business standpoint, you know, attendance has gone from 55 million to 74 million. Revenues from 1 billion to 9 billion. It's in 20 new ballparks built. So I think he leaves pretty comfortable that what he set out to do was, what he accomplished was more than he ever set out to do.
And Richard, I think he learned from what happened in 1994 from that player strike and the killing of the World Series. Didn't he? He learned from that. I think we all did. I think Donald Fear will admit he learned from it. But you know, I find it. You know, I was thinking. I'm writing a piece for the weekend on for our website and Bud Selig, and I was looking at what I was writing today, and I thought, damn, that's a lot more positive stuff than I thought I'd be writing about Bud Selig in 1994.
Right, and you know, and when push come to shove in 2002. There were players, Tom Glavine among them, that flew to New York in those last hours, and they understood, we cannot do this again. What we did to our fans in 94 and 95, we cannot do it again. And there was a famous conversation, Peter Angelos, basically, in a meeting, basically dared the players to walk out over steroid testing. He said, if you're going to go on strike, then we're going to have a strike, but this is something we're going to have in. And I hope everybody's learned. Now, when you're pulling on the same end of the rope, the amazing thing, amazing stuff can happen. You might have been there when the first World Baseball Classic was announced. The owners and players are just hugging each other. And Phil Rogers, our friend from the Chicago Tribune and now works at MLB.com, leans over and goes, geez, I think I liked it better when they hated each other.
It was better for news, that's for sure. Richard, what's your favorite Bud moment, you know, on a personal level or on a professional level?
Last day of the 82 season, you know, the Brewers were on the verge of blowing a 4-game lead with 4 to play. The Orioles and Brewers tie for they're in first place tie going into that day. And the Brewers win that day. And when it's over, they found like 29 of those little cigars with Tipperillos underneath Bud's chair. He had like chewed on or lit. Or something, about 29 of them. But when it was over, Edgar Bennett Williams, the great trial attorney from Washington, owned the Orioles, most unbelievably competitive man I've ever met. He walked over to Bud and grabbed him and hugged him and said, if I had to lose to anybody, buddy, I'm glad it's you.
Richard Justice of MLB.com joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What do you think Bud Selig would consider to be the biggest bit of unresolved business?
Oh, I think there's been great. You know, he hates it when Cubs fight, and that there's 3 issues going on now with the Orioles and Nationals and their TV money. Mm-hmm. The Rays don't have a stadium right now. The Giants A's thing is very ugly because that pits 2 teams against one another. You know, I don't know how worried he is about the Blue Jays and the Orioles working out what's going to happen with Dan Duquette, but I think those 2 ballparks. You know, I think he feels like that probably, you know, his method is that just keep talking, keep forcing teams to talk to each other, and you'll eventually find some middle ground. You'll find a place in a labor agreement where the Yankees and the Rays will see the world the same way. But in this, he hasn't been able to do it. I think the Rays thing will get involved, resolved at some point because they continue to negotiate. But, you know. The Giants and A's just have a disagreement. Everybody says, well, Bud needs to make a decision. Well, you can't – I mean, if the A's move to San Jose, the Giants could be hurt. Now, it could be in the best interest of baseball that the A's are stronger, but that's a really, really complex one, and the 2 teams haven't seemed inclined to give an inch.
Richard, is labor peace the most positive aspect of his legacy?
Oh, by far. His first labor meeting, his first meeting as an owner, Gussie Bush. Remember him, the old guy on the Cardinals? He's pounding his cane. He's hitting Bud with his cane. Basically saying, we're never going to give those bastards anything. And the first 20 years of labor strike was basically was the owners attempting to break the union. And I don't think we're going to have that now. And to get past that, he said his first meeting as commissioner was 92, and they had two new owners, David Glass of the Royals and Drayton McLean of the Astros, and he said they agreed on nothing. The meeting was a disaster. When he looked at these two guys who'd come from the corporate world, and they had a look on their face like, what in the world have we gotten ourselves into? And now the money, the team, because of that, everything stems from that, teams are pretty much rolling in money.
What last question. He is going to stay on as Commissioner Emeritus. What role do you think he will play in, I was going to say the day-to-day operations, but what role do you think he will play insofar as Rob Manfred's, Rob Manfred's duties as commissioner? Will Rob rely on Bud a lot, or will Bud kind of be there just as a, almost like a personal sounding board?
That's exactly it. He's going to be there. I'm here if you need me. If you need me to do something, I'll be there to help you in any way, offer advice. But it's your sport now. And, you know, Rob has brought two of his best trusted lieutenants, Bob Bowman, who did MLB.com, and Tony Petitti, who did the network, brought them to Park Avenue. He has mostly new executive council of owners with guys like Stu Sternberg of the Rays and others. And so, you know, he's going to be his own man. He's going to forge his own path. But I think he knows enough that Bud's genius was lobbying, talking on the phone all day. One time Bud's wife was recovering from surgery, and so Bud worked at home all day. And he's on the phone all day. Okay. You know, listening to complaints from owners and trying to soothe their feelings all day long. And at the end of the day, Sue looks at him and goes, is this what you do all day? And he goes, this is what I do. I try to make everybody see that the glass can be half full.
Richard, it was great. It's always good to talk to you. Great to talk to you today. Thanks so much. Some great stories and some terrific insight.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, man. You be well. That's Richard Justice of MLB.com. Terrific writer, terrific reporter, and like one of the, if you were in the late 80s or early 90s, if you were starting out as a baseball writer, he was one of the guys that was always available to talk to, or could share a source. And as I said, he was one of, I would say there's Tracy Ringlesby, there's Bill Madden, there's Dave Anderson, Murray Chass, Richard, Phil Rogers, I think those would probably be the guys. I'm sure I'm missing a few more, but those were writers that whenever you were in a news conference, and Bud Selig was there, you could always tell if he was pissed at you or not by whether or not he used your name. And he would always use their names. A couple of times I'd ask a question at a news conference, he'd use my first name in a response. I knew when he didn't, and a lot of times those questions were about the Montreal Expos, you knew right away that you'd written something that he wasn't unhappy, or that he was unhappy with, or somebody had told him that you'd said something. But I mean, Richard makes a good point. He used to get a stack of printout sheets on his desk in Milwaukee every day. He would literally read every major newspaper in every market. He would read what was written about baseball that day, and he would call you. And we've got a column up in sportsnet.ca right now that I wrote about Selig. And a couple of times it's kind of focused on this, I was in Pittsburgh covering an Expos game, and they were turning the ground for the new stadium in Pittsburgh. And I decided I'd stay over because, as usual, there was a controversy with the Expos. And I thought, well, I'll stay over and maybe be able to get to talk to Bud. Well, as it turns out, he said he'd only do the interview if I agreed to walk back to the hotel with him. So there you are. You're walking down the streets of Pittsburgh with the commissioner of Major League Baseball, his security guy, Rich Levin, his PR guy. There was another writer there, another national writer there. And I mean, that was Bud. Bud was always, Bud would pick up the phone if you called him at the office in Milwaukee. And if he wasn't busy, he would talk to you. He'd call you on the cell phone. Brunt and I were driving back one day from doing primetime. As a matter of fact, I think it was about 4 years ago. We're driving back. I get a phone call. It's Bud Selig. And he's ripping me a new one because I'd written something about the commissioner's currency equalization fund or something like that. And I remember, like, what the hell? It was just a line in a column that had written earlier that day. But had heard about it. Bud had read it, and Bud didn't like it. So he's an interesting guy. There's a lot more there to Bud Selig than meets the eye. David Sampson is the president of the Miami Marlins. He was, of course, the president of the Montreal Expos. He and Jeffrey Loria were involved in the ownership of the Expos. We all know what happened. Some of us have a different point of view than other people. To some people, Jeffrey Loria and David Sampson stole the Expos. Some of us who were there will say, nah, they actually, they kind of took advantage of a situation and did what probably any of us would have done. They managed to parlay it into a better situation. They've won a World Series with the Miami Marlins. They've got a new stadium built. The Marlins, a very active team this offseason. But David Sampson, probably more than a lot of other people, has seen firsthand the strength of Bud Selig as a negotiator, the strength of Bud Selig as an administrator. It's important that we talk to people who have had day-to-day dealings with Bud Selig, have had to rely on him for advice, or have, frankly, run afoul of him at times to see exactly what he was about as a commissioner. That's why we're very pleased that David Sampson, the president of the Miami Marlins, will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Hockey Central at noon, live from the NHL All-Star festivities in Columbus, is less than half an hour away. It'll be a special extended version of the NHL. I'm sorry, of Hockey Central at noon. We'll go from noon to 1:30. And a cast of bazillions will be involved. The usual suspects drove down this morning and sent selfies all the way, I guess, from St. Catharines. From the prospects game down to Columbus. I'll give you the rundown of our schedule. On the boob tube, the festivities will start tonight at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario for the All-Star Fantasy Draft. This is when captains Jonathan Toews and Nick Foligno select their squads. Tomorrow will be the All-Star Skills Competition. That will be on CBC. Coverage will start with Hockey Central Saturday with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and Damian Cox at 6:30, followed by the event itself. Paul Romanek, Gary Galley, Glenn Healy, Elliot Friedman, and Scott Oak will have the play-by-play, the descriptions, the interviews of that particular event. The game itself is Sunday. Puck drop is at 5 o'clock on Sportsnet. Strombo, Kiprios, McLean, and Cox will be in the panel. Romanek, Galley, Healy, and Oak will provide the commentary of the game itself. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, we will also have the game at 5 o'clock. Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph handling the play-by-play and analyst duties. Gord Stellick and Tom Fergus. We'll have our pregame show coverage starting at 4:30. Tom is sitting in for Mark Osborne, who's enjoying a few days off, and Gord and Tom Fergus will have Hockey Nation tomorrow, as usual, from 5 to 7 p.m. So there you go. That is the schedule on Sportsnet for the NHL All-Star Game. We will get it going with a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon today from Columbus, and you don't have to go anyplace else if you want to keep track of what's happening in Columbus. This is the place to be. Just threw a column up in sportsnet.ca right now about Bud Selig, about his legacy, kind of some personal reflections. Covered baseball since from 1989 to probably 2007 on a regular basis, maybe a little later than that. No, closer to 2010 on a regular basis. So I had dealings, several dealings with Bud Selig, especially with the situation surrounding, that seemed to always be surrounding the Montreal Expos. And as I, the point I made in the column, I think Bud Selig in a lot of ways has been misinterpreted by a lot of people as commissioner. I'm not, look, I'm not romanticizing the guy, as I point out in my column. He's as bloody-minded as anybody, and he's left a lot of bodies since being commissioner of Major League Baseball. But when you look at where the game is now compared to where it was when you took over, when you look at the administration of the game compared to when it was when he took over, when you look at the things the game is talking about now compared to when it was when he took over, it's by and large, to me, the Bud Selig legacy is just so overwhelmingly positive. Now, it's nuanced. I admit it's nuanced. And it's the type of legacy that lends itself to a negative knee-jerk reaction. But again, I urge people to take a look on balance at what Bud Selig has done as commissioner, and it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to come away with any conclusion other than the fact that this guy is really one of the great sports administrators of our time, even though I'm not certain he would necessarily care whether or not you called him that. David Sampson is president of the Miami Marlins. He's had a lot of dealings with Bud Selig over the years, and we're interested in getting a sense of what Bud Selig, the administrator, is like. How does he adjudicate disputes? How does he build consensus? We're very pleased to be joined by David Sampson on the Jeff Blair Show. David, thanks a lot for doing this today.
My pleasure. How are you, Jeff?
I am doing. I'm doing very well. What was Bud Selig like to have to deal with?
He actually was very interesting to deal with because there was an underlying fact that took precedence always, no matter what the dispute was or what the conversation was. And he did everything with complete regard to what the best interests of the game. And he uses that expression a lot, but it really is a meaningful one. Because when two teams are having a dispute, he doesn't choose a side. He chooses a position where the result of his decision will be for the greater good. I actually have called him the John Stuart Mill of baseball, where he is into the greatest good theory, mm-hmm. where sometimes bad things have to happen to certain people, but it's all for the greater good of the game, and that is the institution that it was his job to protect and grow, and that's what he did.
When we talk to him, when we in the media talk to him, I mean, you usually have to put up with him telling you a story about something that happened to him today or something that happened yesterday or somebody he'd run into who said this, and then eventually he'd get around, oh, yeah, the answer to your question is this. What was he like, David? I mean, if you were to approach him, I don't know, at an owner's meeting or whatever, you have a specific issue. Was Bud very matter of fact, or was he the type of guy that would sort of, you know, sort of lead in with a story, I guess is
no,
what?
No, it was really all timing, Jeff. So mm-hmm. what you learn over time, and I actually met Bud Selig when I was 16 years old. I was dating the daughter of the doctor of the Brewers,
mm-hmm.
and who ended up being my wife. And so with Bud, it's always timing. It's always understanding when is the right time to approach. And now that I've been in baseball a long time, I realize that as the owner of a team, you don't approach him in the seventh inning of a close game to talk about something.
Mm-hmm.
And as commissioner, when he, you know, what's important to me and my number one issue is maybe one of only 100 issues that he's dealing with. And so you have to sort of wait your turn and realize that things will get taken care of when it's appropriate to have them taken care of in his mind and on his time frame. And that took some getting used to because everything you want done for yourself is a number one priority. It doesn't mean it's the number one priority for him and for baseball.
Miami.
So once you're used to that, you really learn sort of the rhythm of Bud.
Miami Marlins president David Sampson in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. David, what's his greatest legacy?
I would, for me, it's labor.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can have labor peace for as long as he's had it, given where he came from, it is truly remarkable, because labor can kill a game, because you're talking about fans who can't appreciate millionaires arguing with millionaires. But in the real world of labor and unions, those conversations happen every day. They just happen in places and on subjects that not all fans are emotional about or interested in. But in sports, it is emotional and it is of interest to people. And his ability to work with the players' union and not have any strikes or lockouts in the last 20 years is truly important, and what it did to help our game. And it has set the stage for future relations that will continue to be positive. And that's a great legacy.
David, how has he changed in the years you've known him as a person? Is he still the same guy you met when you were 16 and going out with the daughter of the doctor of his team? Is he the same bud?
He's got the same vinegar, and I said vinegar on purpose, not vigor.
Mm-hmm.
His vinegar and passion level have not changed, and he has never changed in his beliefs of the principles that he uses to guide himself. That hasn't changed. I think what changes when you're in your 40s and 50s to when you're in your late 70s and now 80, I think that you begin to get a little more emotional. And I think that when you're ending a career like he's ending, as one of only 9 people to ever lead this game and the second longest tenure ever, I think you get a little more emotional. So he used to be emotional when it came to his team and winning and losing. But this is a different type of emotion that I've seen recently in him as it relates to the end of his term.
In conversation with David Sampson on the Jeff Blair Show, what is it about Bud David that allowed him, and I'm not going to say he gets credit for all of this, but when you look at where Major League Baseball is in terms of its online properties and just how it's beyond the industry standard. It was years ahead of other organizations, not just leagues, in figuring out how to monetize the internet. And believe me, having been in newspapers, there are a lot of industries that haven't figured that out yet. Baseball has done that. What is it about this Midwestern guy who, on TV can sometimes look like he's doddering and, isn't not
right.
Telegenic. What is it about him that allowed him to create the environment that allowed his people to take this whole notion of the internet and online and turn it into a moneymaker?
I think he has a very interesting quality, which is he really knows what he knows and knows what he doesn't know. And I will tell you, if you ask him today, the first owners meeting I ever attended was in January of 2000, and that's when MLBAM was created. There is no way that anyone in that room knew what it would turn into in only 13 years. So part of that was good fortune. Part of that was amazingly hard work by Bob Bowman and his group. Part of that was how smart we were as an industry to agree with Bud that we should do an online company called MLB.com without knowing what it really meant. So I think that he's been lucky, he's been smart, and he's been consistent. And when you put all those together, good things happen.
He is going to be around as the commissioner emeritus. I, like a lot of people, find it hard not to see him kind of walking into Rob Manfred's office and going, maybe you want to do this. How do you think he's going to cede control to Rob, or do you think he's always
will.
you think okay?
Oh, I know he will, because I know Rob, and Rob is the 10th commissioner, and he starting Saturday, I can't remember, is it Saturday or Sunday? He is the 10th commissioner of Major League Baseball. He will continue to have Bud as a sounding board, as a advisor, as someone with experience, but at the end of the day, if they have a disagreement, the industry will do what Rob directs us to do, not Commissioner Selig. And that's okay, because it is a new day, and Rob is not going to try to be like Bud, because he's smarter than that. And he knows that the way Bud ruled and the way he got consensus and all the way, his total MO is not something that can ever be emulated, and if Rob tries to do that, he will fail, and he does not want to fail.
David, it was good to talk to you as always. You be well.
Take care of yourself. Thank you, Jeff.
David Sampson is president of the Miami Marlins, and a lot of dealings with Bud Selig, who is stepping down as commissioner of Major League Baseball effective Sunday. He will still be commissioner emeritus. Rob Manfred will take over as commissioner, and we appreciate David joining us. And as I said, you all know the history that David Sampson and Jeffrey Loria have with Bud Selig and with baseball in Montreal. And, you know, we all have our different perceptions of it. Mine differs greatly from about 95% of the people in Montreal, 90% of the people in the country. My perception of that particular incident has always revolved around a lack of willingness, a lack of financial fortitude, frankly, a lack of awareness on the part of the Montreal business community. Jeffrey Loria and David Sampson came in. They saw an opportunity to buy a Major League Baseball team, and they did that, and they waited to see where it went. They did exactly what anybody else would have done in that particular situation. And we do appreciate David Sampson joining us. It's important to get an idea. I mean, anybody can sit here and say, well, Bud did this well, Bud did that well. This looks good, this looks bad. I wanted to talk to somebody who's actually had to sit in a meeting with him and saw how he resolved crisis and saw how he built consensus. So I'm very, very happy that David Sampson joined us. That's it for the Blair Show today. We will be back tomorrow. Let me give you a rundown again of the weekend. Hockey Central at noon, a special extended version of Hockey Central at noon, live from Columbus. Tonight will be the All-Star Captains Jonathan Toews and Nick Foligno will select their squads. That will be on Sportsnet Ontario at 8 p.m. Tomorrow is the skills competition. That will be on CBC with our coverage starting at 6:30. Sunday afternoon is the All-Star Game. Puck drop is at 5. That game will be in CBC. Strombolopoulos, Kiprios, McLean, and Cox will be in the panel. Roman Akili, Galley, and Scott Oak will have the on-ice action. On the radio side, Gord Stellick and Tom Fergus have Hockey Nation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday. Tom sitting in for Mark Osborne. Followed by Sunday's game, coverage starting at 4:30. Pre-game with Gordon Tom, followed by the game itself with Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. That's at 5 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. That's it for me. Have a great weekend, everybody.